something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay.
And me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs. If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Well, hey, good looking. Welcome back to the show.
Oh, hi there. Glad to have you back.
Thanks for joining us yet again.
Yes.
Here today on this lovely day, I hope. I hope it's lovely wherever you are.
These sticky Georgia summers. I just don't like, I don't like sweating.
Mm-hmm.
I don't like bugs. I hate, oh God, I don't like bugs. I tolerate bugs. I love a lot of bugs, let's be fair. I love like colorful, cool bugs.
Yeah.
But I don't like tiny little bugs that get in your eyes. I don't like mosquitoes.
No. Gnats, mosquitoes, yellow jackets, you can all go straight to Hades.
Yeah.
Just to keep it, you know, Greek.
Yeah, yeah, we got to stay in the moment.
Keep it Roman, you know what I'm
yeah.
saying?
or Pluto.
Mm-hmm. You can go straight to Pluto.
Yeah, I wish they would.
They would not like it there.
I just read that it's like the 15th anniversary of Pluto not being a planet anymore.
You know, everybody says it's when they turned on the Large Hadron Collider that everything went to shit.
Yeah.
And we turned into another timeline. But you know what? It might have been.
Yeah.
And they decided Pluto was not a planet.
It works for me.
The timeline I live in, Pluto is a damn planet.
What was that, 2006? Yeah, I mean, maybe Y2K screwed it all up.
Mm.
Maybe we really did shift into a parallel dimension at Y2K.
Where the computers could change from 99 to 00.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it was all downhill from there.
Computers can count.
Well, we're glad to have you back for part two of Hadrian and Antonis.
Yes.
One of the most famous and celebrated gay Roman stories of all time.
So true.
Yeah.
I think it provided a lot of inspiration and representation and comfort for many gay people through the ages.
Yeah. Still to this day, it's celebrated. And we will get into that. When last we left our heroes, Hadrian was bringing Antonis to the Eleusinian Mysteries.
Ooh.
This is a ritual And one that was a tightly guarded secret, right?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. So to this day, it's hard to tell what they were. But we're going to talk about what they were. We're going to talk about what it meant and how their relationship developed after that. Mm-hmm. And what their relationship meant to Rome.
Yeah.
To the empire as a whole, how it impacted people, because it had a lasting impact on many people, the two of them, as a couple and as individuals.
I think it's interesting that Antonius is still, his name is still one that we know to this day, because as we pointed out in part one, he never tried to have any political influence over Hadrian. So unlike some of our other, political matches that we've talked about, it's usually the queen or the empress or whatever kind of exceeding her brief, you could say, and having a lot more influence and power and ideas and stuff going on behind the scenes,
definitely.
I guess. So I just thought this was an interesting departure that he didn't really have anything to do with the politics of the day, but he still is such an important representation of homosexual love with Hadrian. And plus everything Hadrian is about to do that we're going to tell you all about. But that just made their relationship still echo through history so strongly.
Yeah.
I think that's interesting.
That is cool. Well, it's a long story. We got a lot left to talk about these guys. So I say we dive right in.
Let's go.
Hey there, friends. Come listen well. Eli and Diana got some stories to tell. There's no matchmaking or romantic tips. It's just about ridiculous relationships. A lover might be any type of person at all. An abstract concept or a concrete wall. But if there's a story worth a second glance, we'll put it in our show, Ridiculous Romance.
A production of iHeartRadio.
All right.
Quick, yeah.
What the hell are the Eleusinian mysteries? Because it sounds like maybe going to one of those like murder mystery dinner theater or something like that.
Oh, shit. That's funny. And you have to figure out who, like it's an Among Us, but in person. No, the mysteries were a set of religious rites for the cult of Demeter and Persephone. So the myth is that Persephone was kidnapped by Hades to live in the underworld.
Sure.
And her mother, Demeter, asked the god Zeus to help get her back.
Let's go!
And Zeus was like reluctant for some reason for a while, but he finally agreed Persephone should be brought back from Hades.
Okay.
But by then, the god of the underworld had tricked Persephone into eating 4 or 6 pomegranate seeds, depending on which story you read.
Always bad news.
Right. And if you ate anything in the underworld, it meant you always had to return to the underworld.
Damn. It's like Denny's. Like if you eat at Denny's, you're going to end up back at a Denny's.
At a Denny's one day.
Yeah.
Mm. Well, we've eaten at a Denny's, so we'll see you soon, Denny's.
I mean, you can't escape it.
Nope. So that meant that Persephone had to return to the underworld for 4 to 6 months out of every year. And Demeter would be sad when Persephone was in Hades, accounting for the winter months of no harvest.
Oh, sure.
But when Persephone would emerge from the underworld, Demeter would be happy again and let flowers and plants grow, marking the first day of spring.
Honestly, that makes more sense to me than all this newfangled science and meteorology we talk about. With how the whole earth tilts and points further away from the sun, and that's why
sure.
it's cold? Okay. Clearly, the guy in charge is bummed that his girlfriend's gone. So it's winter. Hello.
Duh. But the religious rites of the Eleusinian mysteries were so secret that they were never written down.
Damn.
Some people were even put to death for talking about them publicly. So we still don't know to this day exactly what they entailed.
God, we can't even keep the Spider-Man trailer that secret.
I know, right? But they kept those Eleusinian mysteries on lock.
Take a note, Disney.
Okay. Or people who watch Disney, I guess. Disney's working real hard.
Well, they're not enacting harsh enough penalties for their leaks.
Actually, I had a friend, Nick Decay, make a whole cute, like, funny video about somebody watching a pirated copy of, like, a Marvel movie. And there was a Disney SWAT team he created that, like, come in and, like, bust in on him. And they even had a little, like, Mickey Punisher kind of logo. It was really funny.
That's awesome.
this is exactly what... this is happening somewhere.
Look, I wish, because I don't want to be spoiled.
I know, right? Thank you. Let me enjoy the movie in my own fucking time.
Yeah, in the way that it was meant to be enjoyed.
So anyway, but what historians think the Eleusinian Mysteries probably involved was a dramatic retelling of the myth of Persephone.
Sure.
So you see a little theater.
Cool.
And then they showed you like some sacred objects and there was stuff like that.
All right. All right.
And some scholars, including Timothy Leary, suggested that because there's many written references to like people having visions, you know, and like kind of hallucinations and,
right.
you know, waking dreams or whatever mm-hmm. kind of experiences during these rites, that there were probably some kind of psychoactive drugs involved, maybe mushrooms.
Oh. So you come in here and they're like, all right, now we're going to watch dramatic retelling of the myth of Persephone. Here's a sheet of acid. Everyone, I'm going to put it on your tongue.
There's some theater that would be improved greatly by a sheet of acid.
Look, I mean, that's, well, yeah. And some theater was meant to be enjoyed that way. I mean, that's why we have Cirque du Soleil, right?
Right, exactly. Which I love in that, whatever movie, was it I Love You, Man?
Yeah.
Or something where they go and they're laughing. They're like, they're at work right now. So anyway, so maybe there was some drugs involved, some kind of like tea that they would drink or smoke, something they would smoke together. I don't
right.
know. And once the religious rites were over, they'd have drinking, food, and dancing for several days. So these rites were extremely popular. Cicero and Plato wrote praise about them and said that the rites brought initiates to a place of pure spiritual enlightenment where they kind of like shook off all the humanly down-to-earth day-to-day stuff and were able to attain a greater plane of understanding, blah, blah, blah. That's another reason why people probably
balls.
Think they were tripping balls.
Oh,
so,
man.
Yeah, basically he and Antinous are dropping acid at Burning Man for a couple days. That's the Eleusinian Mysteries.
Yeah. Oh, man, I talked to Hades, man, I'm telling you. Zeus came right down, handed me a bolt of lightning, and just started dancing with it.
Dude, have you eaten any pomegranate seeds today? Aw, don't trick me, man.
Welcome to Denny's.
And Hadrian had this epiphany around this time to build a Panhellenion, which was kind of like a UN of Greek city-states.
Okay.
And it was intended to unify Greece. And so he kind of set those plans in motion. He's like, figure out who's Greek, because apparently that was kind of hard to figure out which city-states were actually Greek in origin and which were not.
Nebulous borders, yeah.
Yeah. So he's like, figure it out. And then he went on to Egypt with Antinous and the rest of his entourage.
I like the idea that he was still tripping with this idea. Like, I got it, man. We'll just build one building where everybody comes in and we just talk until it's all peaceful, man.
Mm-hmm.
Like, we all just have peace because we're all in the same place. Aren't we all just the same thing, really?
Right.
I love this.
And Antinous is over there like, God. I love you so much. You're so
Let me just touch
hot.
Your hair. Let me just touch your hair. Oh, it feels so good.
You're so fucking hot, the way that you rule Rome.
So Hadrian and Antinous, everybody get to Egypt, his whole tour posse, and they restore some tombs and stuff as a way to sort of reaffirm Roman hegemony, because there'd been some unrest during Trajan's reign in the, like, Egypt territory. And Hadrian and Antinous also heard about a lion that was messing with people in Libya, and they decided they'd go hunt it down. And during the lion hunt, Hadrian saved Antinous's life.
Thank you.
And the lion was killed. But Hadrian doesn't like to brag, right? He's a humble guy. He's not, I'm just doing my thing. I'm just helping people out. I just want people to be happy. You know, I don't need any big deal made out of this. All he had was a bunch of historians write about it. He commissioned a poem about it. He cast bronze medallions depicting it, and even had a tondo of the event, which is a big circular piece of art placed on the Arch of Constantinople. So, you know, again, just humble.
He's like, I kill a boar, I build a city. I kill a lion, I get a bunch of artwork done.
Yeah. Write me an epic poem about this lion I killed and the time I saved my lover's life.
And make sure to put in it that I looked amazing.
Yeah, talk about my hair.
Yeah, my hair is blowing in the wind.
Uh-huh.
Muscles flexing and bunching.
Rippling.
Rippling everywhere. Uh-huh. Sinews. I want to look like I'm covered in oil.
Yeah. And then in September or October of the year 130, Hadrian, Antinous, and his all entourage embarked on a flotilla down the Nile River, where Antinous tragically drowned.
Now, this this is a bit of a mystery for the ages because no one's quite sure what happened to Antinous. Hadrian said it's a tragic accident. He fell overboard. But some historians have said that Hadrian's interest in all things Greek stretched to certain types of magic, which included this idea that if a younger person sacrifices themselves for you, your life will be prolonged.
Damn.
So...
wait, I'm younger than you.
Right.
By about, what, 6 months?
Mm-hmm.
So, I'm just saying, don't get any ideas. I know your interest in Greek magic, and I just want to say it only goes so far.
I could really prolong my life by a couple of months.
No. Yes, six. No. I get an extra 6 months.
You can get a lot done in 6 months, is all I'm saying.
Well,
I mean, unless you're me. I'd be like, cool, 6 months to rewatch Ted Lasso.
One can get a lot done in 6 months.
Depends.
Yeah.
So anyway, Hadrian had been dealing with this unexplained chronic illness for a couple years now.
Oh, sure.
So maybe he thought that Antinous' death would cure him. Or maybe Antinous believed it and killed himself voluntarily.
Yeah.
As like a sacrifice for Hadrian. So kind of they're like, if Antinous did it on purpose or if Hadrian had it done, you know, that's up for debate. Just as many scholars think it's not likely at all that Hadrian would have had Antinous kill himself for this magical reason, because Hadrian was very much against human sacrifice. Mm. He had strengthened laws against it in the Roman Empire. So they were like, that doesn't really make any sense.
Yeah, well, how many times have leaders strengthened laws against something that they themselves practice
constantly.
Regularly?
Very true. Very good point. So who knows? No one really knows what happened to Antinous. It's possible that he really legit just fell into the river and died.
Yeah. Whatever the reason, Hadrian was broken up over it, naturally, understandably. According to the Historia Augusta, he, quote, wept like a woman over his dead lover.
Boring.
Jeez, come on, guys. Oh, you cried over the person you loved for so long? What a girl.
Fellas, is it gay to be sad when someone dies?
Fellas, is it gay to be sad when your gay lover dies?
Fellas, is it gay to mourn your gay lover?
Fellas, is it gay to be gay? Oh. Well, he was very sad. In fact, he named a star in the sky for Antinous. As opposed to stars elsewhere.
Sorry, yeah, like, you're right. As opposed to the star in the...
in the Hollywood Boulevard. He put a star on the sidewalk.
He put a little thing on the Arch of Constantinople.
He named a star for Antinous, as well as a rosy lotus that grew on the banks of the Nile.
Mm.
So it's likely that Hadrian was very sad about Antinous, understandably. I mean, right. It makes sense. They'd spent so much time together, bonding. They were very close. But there was some shady shit that kind of made people wonder and gossip all throughout the empire about what really happened, right? So first of all, Antinous is depicted as being around 20 years old at this time. And so he's growing into being more of a man. He's getting bigger and more muscular and hairier. Some people speculate that their relationship was changing because of this. Like maybe... Antinous isn't Hadrian's type anymore.
No, thanks.
Or maybe he had another boy he was looking at or something. Or maybe Antinous was growing up and kind of taking a little more autonomy in the relationship and sort of resisting him now that he was kind of old enough and strong enough to do so.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't know. That feels kind of weird to me to say, like, oh, well, we've spent all this time together. We've bonded so much. We love doing all the same things. I've taken you on all my travels. Like, they seem to really be in love. They're totally open about their romance. And now he's like, oh, but your body changed, so bye. I'm going to kill you now.
Yeah, I don't see it. Especially because they're like, when Antinous was a young preteen boy, Hadrian was not interested.
Right.
He was interested when he was like 16, 17 years old.
Yeah, and he found that he was smart and cool and
right, and they had more, yeah, it wasn't just about like his body. He was like, no, I'm not just hot for your body. I like your brain. We have similar interests.
Yeah.
So it just seems like really dismissive of that clear connection to say, oh, well, he got to be more manly and he liked boys, so he wanted a boy and not a man.
And it kind of out of nowhere brings in this assumption that Antinous needed to resist him.
Was being raped?
Like that, yeah, that he didn't like, you know, which is definitely possible, but didn't seem to have been the story at all. That kind of doesn't come up until this.
No. And it is hard to say because there's nothing about Antinous himself. You know, like he didn't write anything down. Nobody asked him a question about the relationship. So who knows? You know, it might just be like, let's give him the benefits of some agency and say maybe he's an emperor and he wasn't able to say no. And now he's kind of able to say no.
Yeah.
But again, I think that really takes away from a lot of what we already know about them, which is that they have a lot of shared interests and enjoyed talking and spending time together. Also, why kill him?
Well,
you know, if you don't want to have sex anymore, that's fine. That's something. But you're talking about a smart, strong, handsome man. Wouldn't you want to elevate that person in politics or the military or something?
Something,
like, you wouldn't just be like, and time for you to die.
Yeah. And I hate to stop us there, but we have got to go to a commercial. So don't go away.
Without the ones like you, who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you, with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6 million.
Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back to the show.
So, the next thing that the Romans were all in speculation station about was that immediately after Antonius's death, Hadrian bypassed the Roman Senate and deified Antonius. And he encouraged Egyptians to worship him as the Osiris incarnate. And this is because the story of Osiris is that he drowned in the Nile River and then he was resurrected. So it was a long-held belief in Egypt that anyone who drowned in the Nile would undergo the same journey. Mm-hmm. So that kind of made people think like, well, was this part of the plan just to get him deified, to sort of bring this sort of godlike connection to his own reign, I guess?
Yeah, they're like, what a coincidence. He died in the Nile on the day of Osiris's resurrection during Osiris Festival. You know, like it... after the fact seemed like a big coincidence.
Yeah. Yeah.
So there was like conspiracy theories about this kind of floating around.
I mean, it happening on the same exact day was something, but it also makes sense that they would be in that area for this festival around this time.
And because it happened on that day, the Egyptian priests were the ones who told Hadrian, hey, you should deify him.
Right.
He's going to undergo the same journey as Osiris and become Osiris incarnate, so you may as well go for it.
Yeah.
So I don't know that it's so much Hadrian going, let me drown this kid in the Nile and make him a god, more than, oh, this kid drowned in the Nile and I can make him a god and make it politically make sense for me.
Right.
You know, it's sort of turning a tragic circumstance to your benefit rather than creating a tragic circumstance to your benefit.
Right.
Which I think we forget a lot. I feel like a lot of times, modern day and also looking back, we like to ascribe a lot of intent onto people.
Yeah.
When most of the time people are reacting blindly to shit that happens.
Yeah.
And they're going, oh, well, this happened. How can I make it work for me?
And that's
more likely.
Right. And it's so easy to look back at that and find these coincidences and call them intentional.
Mm-hmm.
Because there's coincidence in everything.
Right. And sometimes people lay a plan. I'm not saying it's never true, but it's just funny that, I don't know, I feel like a lot of times we really try to find some plan where there wasn't any plan. Somebody just went, ooh, I know what to do. This will make it good for me. I'll do it like this, or I'll say it like this, or I'll spin it this way.
It's kind of like how everything happens for a reason is so provable because of causality. Like everything that happens because something happened before it to end up that way. So in retrospect, you can say, well, A happened so that B would happen. When in fact, B happened because A happened, but it might have been C. It might have been D, you know?
Yeah.
It's hard to say one thing's happening to cause another thing when it's easy to look at that backwards.
Yeah.
It's easy to draw that conclusion after the fact. Anyway.
But yeah, Hadrian also declared that a city should be built on the spot of Antonius's death, which he named Antonopolis.
He's really got a... Somebody's got to tell him about plaques.
I know, right? He's like, build a city.
Like, just mark the location, put a little sign up. Huh? You don't have to build a whole damn city for it. I don't know. I guess they were thirsty for cities back then.
Yeah, probably. They were just like, sure, looks great. But since ancient Greece, actually, it was pretty common for tomb building and town settling to go hand in hand.
Okay.
Because I guess that you build a tomb for somebody famous, you got an instant tourist attraction.
Right.
People come, leave gifts and shit. So then you can have a market. So then you can on and on and on.
Wow.
And so you become a capital.
So it starts with a gift shop.
Yeah.
All cities start with a gift shop.
Everything starts with a gift shop.
Buy your trinkets to leave at the grave of Antinous. Step
you must
right up.
Enter and exit through the gift
yeah.
shop.
Yeah. Get them right here. And then somebody's like, man, I am buying trinkets for Antinous every day. I should just set up a house.
I know, right? Let me just hang out here.
And they're like, oh, you're moving over to buy that gift shop? You know what? I've been looking for a new spot. Maybe I'll move next door to you. He's like, oh, God, this is not how I wanted neighbor to be. But all right, fine. Yeah, and then before you know it, it's a whole city.
Have you seen the traffic these days? There were 3 carts going to the market today. It took me an extra 5 minutes.
And, the gift shop, you know, it was nice for a while, but it just turned into a Starbuckicus.
Oh, Lord.
Starbuckus. Starbuckus coffacus.
Coffacus sounds like a disease.
Starbuckus brewerus.
There you go. But establishing this town did a great deal for Hadrian's political positions. So this was another element to the conspiracy theory as well, that they were like, oh, he wanted to build this town because it let him have a new port in the Nile. It was a way to solidify Roman authority in the Egyptian provinces. So just a lot of convenient shit for Hadrian's political goals.
Yeah, I feel like there's any number of people he could have killed to get his town started than his own lover. Or he could have just built a town.
Yeah.
Who's stopping him?
He probably could have built a town there. Apparently it had already been a town, it was like in ruins, but there was already a port there. So when they built the town, it went up very quickly because they already had a lot of the infrastructure. So I'm like, it might have been the plan to put a town there anyway. And he just happened to name it for Antinous because of this tragedy, but otherwise he would have named it like Hadrianopolis or something. And establishing Antinous as a god was helpful to his Hellenic policies as well. Antinous was Greek, so he's a part Greek, part Egyptian deity who was established by a Roman emperor. So he was literally a symbol of pan-Hellenic unity, all wrapped up in one guy.
Yeah.
And it became a great way for cities and provinces to get Hadrian's attention or to show their loyalty to him. For example, there's a city in North Africa that really wanted Hadrian to honor them with a visit. So they put up a bunch of images of Antinous real fast so that they might catch his attention. He'd be like, I'll go visit because you clearly are a fan of mine. If you like Antinous, you like me.
Yeah.
Like he became all wrapped up in Hadrian's own legacy.
So this cult of Antinous grew and grew and it became popular even after Hadrian's death. Likely it was because Antinous had been a real human person once, like not born of the gods, but just like your average Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And your average, what was it in ancient Rome?
Yeah. Your average
Joe the Plumbus.
Joe the Plumbus.
So Antinous was like more relatable than other gods. And another reason was that, I mean, he was smoking hot. This guy was the, George Clooney meets Hugh Jackman meets all the boyish charm of Ryan Reynolds.
Aw.
And, the go-get-em attitude of Stanley Tucci.
Oh,
just all wrapped
Stanley
up
Tucci.
Into the perfect man.
Ugh, true.
But for real, everybody thought he was so hot. And gods like Apollo or beautiful young people that gods loved, like Narcissus, invited imaginary erotic bonding with his worshippers.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, I don't think it was anything like written down, like imagine Antinous is coming into your room, breakfast in bed, or whatever, and there's a curtain fluttering over your bed.
Wow.
I don't think it was anything like that, but it's just something about humans. You know, we prefer something beautiful.
We
love a hot God.
Yeah.
Kind of made me think of all the Christian hymns that talk about like letting Jesus come inside you.
Oh my.
Or whatever. Or even, I mean, if you think about Jesus on the crucifix, they make him look hot.
Right.
They give him muscles. There's not a lot of blood pouring out. He don't look beat up like he was beat up on the way there.
Wow. Until Mel Gibson came along.
But, you know, it you want him to look godlike. And if you're very beautiful, like an insanely handsome or whatever, you look godlike. And that makes people go, God, you know, he's above my touch, but how much would I love to touch? Well, I guess.
Yeah, I think that, I mean, it's subliminal, but I think it is there. Like, we want that idyllic body shape. You're like, if God created a man, why would he not create one that is a perfect specimen?
Sublime.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Like Chris Hemsworth.
Yes.
You know?
Just like Chris Hemsworth.
I believe you have written a few hymns about letting Chris Hemsworth come into your room.
Chris Hemsworth.
Let him in. May he enter my body.
May he
fill me with his spirit. With all the force of the thunder of the gods.
Let him in.
I know I've heard you sing that. Maybe in your sleep.
It was a beautiful dream.
Yeah. But this cult of Antinous spread very easily in Egypt, but it was a little slower to take off in Greece. So Hadrian came in and made sure that Antinous worship became integrated with the Greek god Hermes. Probably because during the Hellenistic age, Hermes was associated with wisdom and learning, as well as being a god who existed between the boundaries of the underworld and the upper world. So it kind of goes along with the Osiris resurrection story as well. There's just a lot of little elements that make Antinous and Hermes seem like a good matchup.
Mm-hmm. But most Grecians actually ended up associating him with Dionysus, despite Hadrian's best efforts.
It's not necessarily the god you want to be tied to.
Not necessarily, although he was also categorized as a dying and rising god who communicates between the living and dead.
Yeah.
So he also had some things in association, I guess, with Antinous.
And everybody loved him, right?
Like, right.
Who doesn't want to hang out with Dionysus?
Good time, yeah.
Right?
And he's a good time.
Like, you might not feel great the next morning, but you had a good time.
Traces of the cult of Antinous have been found in over 70 cities.
Wow.
Over 30 cities created coins with Antinous's likeness, not meant to be used as currency.
Right.
They were meant to be used as like medallions. Some even had a hole drilled in them so you could put a string through it and wear it like a talisman.
Yeah, okay. Oh, I see your cult of Antinous.
Oh, yes.
Yeah, come on in. Cult of Antinous, no cover tonight for cult of Antinous members. Bring your medallion. Get right in.
And Hadrian also commissioned at least 2,000 statues of Antinous. And they all, like I mentioned earlier, they all have, you know, a swollen chest, jawline for days. He's usually looking down.
Mm-hmm.
So people think that Hadrian released a likeness of Antinous for people to copy.
Yeah, okay.
Because he was like, I want it to look like my man Antinous. I don't want it to look like something random.
Yeah.
He needs to look just like this. And around 115 of these statues still exist today.
They held games in honor of Antinous in 9 cities. And they would have athletic and artistic components in these games. So like you throw a shot put, but it's covered in paint. It lands on a canvas.
This sounds cool.
Hey, I would play that game.
That should be an Olympic game.
Uh-huh. Like a javelin into like a pegboard, you know, and you're trying to create like an image out of little points, line designs.
Like a light bright.
Yeah, like
a light
bright
of javelin.
Yes, a javelin light bright.
Can we please do a javelin light bright?
Come on.
We need to make the artistic Olympic Games. That would be really fun.
Okay.
The Art-lympics.
The Art-lympics. Olympic commissioners, I know you're listening. Relinquish your power and give it to us. I want you guys to do this.
You're fucking around with these bikinis and shit, so let's.
Yeah,
you're
a mess. You're a mess. Hand it over to us. We're going to create the Art-lympics.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my God, this is great. Hey, y'all, send us a message with your idea for Art-lympic games. We're going to put together a whole system, and we're going to tell you guys about it in a future episode.
I'm ready. I love this javelin light bright, literally.
Art-lympics, yes.
I will watch that.
So anyway, they're playing these games and rumors spread that in Antinopolis, there were sacred nights held as part of the games, which included, of course, drunken revelries and possibly, but I'm going to say probably, big sexual orgies.
I wondered if this rumor happened after he was already associated with Dionysus.
With Dionysus, right?
Because people would go, oh, of course, because he's associated with Dionysus.
Right.
Or if, yeah,
the other way around,
they heard these rumors and then associated him with Dionysus.
Yeah. Of course, when Christianity started to spread through Rome, the cult of Antinous fell.
Everything pagan was outlawed.
Yeah.
So, and bye.
The city of Antonopolis fell as well. Mm-hmm. But Antinous's popularity lasted longer than even Hadrian's, and evidence shows that he was worshipped publicly and privately by many families throughout the whole empire. Children were even named for him in Egypt, Athens, Macedonia, and Italy.
So he was
a hot figure.
Yeah, people really, they liked him.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? They were into this cult. And it wasn't just to show Hadrian that they were a big fan of his, because, again, some of this worship was private.
Yeah.
It was within their homes. So they clearly found some connection to Antinous somewhere.
He's like Tom Hanks.
Right.
Everybody just loved him.
America's sweetheart.
Yeah.
He was Roman Empire's sweetheart.
Sweeticus Harticus.
So this cult's gaining popularity all over, over multiple years. What's Hadrian doing?
That's a good question.
Let's find out after this commercial break.
Ooh.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots as I sit down with inspiring women like Misty Copeland, Brooke Shields, Vanessa Hudgens, and so many more. We dive into how these women made their pivot and their mindset shifts that happened as a result. It's a podcast about women, their stories, and how their pivot became their success. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Neil Strauss, host of the Tenderfoot TV true crime podcast, To Live and Die in LA. I'm here to tell you about the new podcast I've been undercover investigating for the last year and a half. It's called To Die For. Here's a clip.
All these girls were sent out into the world, and they were told, try to meet important men, try to attach yourself to important men.
The voice you're hearing is a Russian model agent telling me about spies sent out to seduce men with political power.
The war in Ukraine is also being fought by all these girls that are all over important cities.
For the first time, a military-trained seduction spy reveals how the Russian government turned sex and love into a deadly weapon.
If you want to kill your target, it's easy. You just seduce him, take him somewhere, start having sex, and then he's very vulnerable, so you can kill him easily.
To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
I used to have so many men.
How this beguiling woman in her 50s...
She looked like a million bucks.
...with zero qualifications...
She had a Harvard plaque.
...tricks her way past a wall of lawyers and agents.
She's got all of these Maseratis and Bentleys all in the driveway.
Is it like a mansion?
Yes, it's a mansion. ...that this queen of the con uses to scam some of the biggest names in professional sports out of untold fortunes.
About $6
million? Approximately $11 million.
Nearly $10 million was all gone.
Employing whatever means necessary to bleed her victims dry.
She would probably have sex with one of her clients.
Hide your money in your old rich man, because she is on the prowl.
Listen to Queen of the Con, Season 5, The Athlete Whisperer, on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Danielle Moody here, host of the Woke AF Daily podcast. We've been with iHeart's Outspoken Network for a year, and what a year it has been. Every weekday, I navigate our rapidly changing world alongside our series of fabulous expert guests. As we head deeper into 2024 and yet another life-changing election cycle, Woke AF Daily is here to keep you sane and woke. Woke not just to the latest headlines, but also to the collective power we all have. Woke to the need to build community with those around us. Woke to how to avoid burnout. And woke to the ways we can all find joy in the madness. Make Woke AF Daily with Danielle Moody your podcast destination for 2024 election news and analysis. And tune in to hear the ways I am working to stay grounded amidst it all. Listen to Woke AF Daily Season 5 on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Oh, hi, I'm Rachel Zoe, and I'm back for another season of my podcast, Climbing in Heels. You might know me from the Rachel Zoe Project or perhaps from my work as a celebrity stylist. And guess what? I'm still just as fully obsessed with all things fashion, beauty, and business. My podcast, Climbing in Heels, is all about celebrating the stories of extraordinary women, and this season, we're taking things up a notch. I'll be talking to some incredible women across so many industries, from models and beauty industry stars to doctors, entrepreneurs, and TV personalities. Climbing in Heels is here to bring you a weekly dose of glamour, inspiration, and fun. Every week, listeners will be able to ask me any questions. I'm answering it all. My life is absolutely crazy with so much going on, and I'm so beyond excited to bring you along for the ride. Whether we're talking red carpet looks, current trends, or products I'm obsessed with, I'm here to be your fashion fairy godmother. Listen to Climbing in Heels every Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back, everyone. Hope you enjoyed those wonderful commercials.
We left with the cult of Antinous gaining popularity all over, and what in the world was Hadrian doing in the meantime?
Right.
Well, he kept it moving, because he had to rule
sure.
Empire.
Sure. Can't just put that down.
Can't just put that down.
Yeah.
Very true. Can't just go hide in a corner and cry.
Well, like a woman.
Exactly. it is well documented that he went to see the Colossi of Memnon.
Who wouldn't?
Right? Which were built by Pharaoh Amenhotep III.
Hey, I remember that guy.
Which we did an episode about.
Yeah.
And his wife, Queen Tiye.
Queen Tiye. I love them. Go check out that episode.
Mm-hmm, that was a cool one.
Yeah.
In the year 130, he officially launched the Panhellenic.
Yeah. How does it feel?
The Panhellenian. In 130, I can't.
Oh, you're in it now.
How does it feel?
You're about to get the TikTok music.
In 130, he officially launched the Panhellenian in Athens. Ooh. And this had mixed reviews in the empire. Plenty of places were Hellenistic in culture, but they didn't fit his very narrow view of Greekness.
Oh.
You know how that is, I guess. We all know how that is.
Sure. Like, it's very...
Your diaspora isn't diaspora enough. a lot of places in Asia Minor were unenthusiastic and pretty jealous of how much he liked all that Greek shit. They had their own culture that would rather...
Right.
They would rather, for some reason, rather have. and some places pretended to have historic Grecian ties that didn't actually exist just because they wanted to be a member and curry favor with him. So it wasn't like a perfect union
by any
means.
Show up with like 2 euros in their hands. They're like, hey, I'm super Greek.
Hey, I know.
Love it.
I got a column over here. I got some lamb on a spit over here.
Yeah, very Doric.
I love olives.
Oof, yeah, you know me and my olives. I'm gonna. Oh, I can't stop eating feta cheese. I guess it's just my natural culture. So Hadrian's whole thing was unity, right? But in one big way, he failed, and that was with the Jews. Mm-hmm. In the year 132, he visited Jerusalem, probably to rebuild it in the Roman style, because it was still in ruins from the first Jewish-Roman War in the year 66. The idea was that Jerusalem would be under Roman rule. The non-Roman population wouldn't have to participate in any religious activities, but they did have to support the imperial order by serving in the army and things like that. So he wanted essentially to assimilate the Jewish temple into the imperial cult, which had been done in other places with some success. But thanks to a Jewish leader named Simon Bar Kokhba, there was a revolt amongst the Jews. In the Talmud, he's portrayed as somewhat irrational and irascible. He presided over an army of 200,000, but would make them prove their valor by cutting off one of their fingers.
Oh,
no, thank you.
I think people at the time were like, why would you want to mutilate our own army?
Yeah,
like,
for real.
How is that helpful?
And how does that prove anything? All it proves is that I know you're going to hurt me if I don't do this to myself.
Uh-huh.
It doesn't.
Or that I'm dumb enough to cut off one of my fingers gladly. Like, what do you? I don't know. That doesn't seem like a good thing. But
and making people mutilate themselves doesn't feel like a good way to build loyalty.
No.
At any rate, when he went into battle, he would say, "Oh, Master of the Universe, there is no need for you to assist us against our enemies, but do not embarrass us either." Like, come on. God, don't really need you right now, but don't make me look like an idiot out here. I got this.
Dear Jesus, I know we're going to win today, but please don't embarrass me in front of all my friends.
That's the football team? That's the high school football team?
Yeah, that's the high school. The high school football team.
But they were super organized. They were so organized that the Romans suffered a pretty severe defeat and had to adopt this scorched earth policy of razing everything to the ground just to demoralize the Judeans. But eventually, they were fully suppressed. Cassius Dio wrote that 580,000 Jews were killed over the 3 years the war went on, with the number of those dying from famine and disease and fire, quote, past finding out. Hadrian erased Judea from the map, basically mashing together Judea, Samaria, and Galilee into a province that he called Syria Palestina. Which, of course, didn't have any lasting repercussions in the region.
None whatsoever.
Everything was fine.
We've
thanks
never
a lot,
heard
Hadrian.
About Syria Palestina ever again.
Oh, my God. The number of times that you look back at history and they say, the number of Jews who died was...
past finding out.
Past finding out is, like, far too many times.
It's very insane.
Yeah.
So... but yeah, celebrations and commendations for ending the second Jewish-Roman War were kept to a minimum because Hadrian considered it a failure in his dream to unite all the peoples of the Roman Empire. He included Jews in that, and because he could not assimilate them into his own culture, or, I guess, successfully have a way for them to keep their own culture while still being a part of the empire, he was like, don't congratulate me. That's not what I wanted. I didn't want to suppress and kill a bunch of Jewish people.
Yeah, I didn't want to have to kill a half a million Jewish people, more than half a million, but...
I did do it.
I just, you know...
Why'd you make me do this?
Yeah, right.
In 136, the Empress Vibia Sabina died. And though she was deified after her death, as was her due, most empresses were, everyone knew that it was not a happy marriage. The Historia Augusta says that at one point, Hadrian himself said that his wife's ill temper and irritability would be enough of a reason for a divorce if he were only a private citizen.
Wow.
So he was not, much like her temper tantrums in front of other people, he was not afraid, I guess, at least amongst his own circles, to be pretty clear about how he felt about her,
yeah,
too. So there were quite a lot of rumors that went around that Hadrian poisoned Vibia Sabina, which again, you know, from our perspective in the future, a lot of historians are like, "What? Why? He lived with her for a very long, 36 years they were together. What? Why wouldn't he have killed her before that? You know, what would be the point at this point of his life to poison her?
Look,
you know, what's the point?
They didn't have Peacock. They didn't have Hulu
exactly.
Back then. They didn't have much. They had to make their own stories.
They had to make some shit up.
Now, near the end of his life, as he was dying from this mysterious illness, Hadrian, of course, had to name a successor. Which, I mean, again, just what a creepy marker of your own mortality and your own impending death.
Right.
It's like it's people just starting to be like, hey, it's like being nudged at retirement.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like, hey, where are you going to move when you retire? And you're like, fuck, is that next year? Oh, I'm so old. And then being like, hey, time to name an heir. You're like, fuck, I guess I'm almost dead. I guess everybody thinks of me as almost a corpse.
It kind of makes me think of like a real rich guy writing his will.
Yeah.
Like he's like, I don't want anyone to know what's in my will yet.
Yeah.
Because they might kill me if I name them.
Yeah.
And if I don't name them, they might do something to me. You know, it's just like you need to be careful, but you have to get it all in writing at some point, and you have to pick your timing really carefully. And anyway, it's very weird.
So Hadrian's dealing with this and he's got to name a successor. He had originally considered his brother-in-law, Servianus, when he was in the early years of his reign. But Servianus was in his 90s now, so he was way too old to pick.
Yeah.
Hadrian had moved on to Servianus's grandson, Fuscus Salinator. Salinator, probably, but I like Salinator.
I know Salinator is so gross.
Fuscus Salinator. Sounds like a death robot who drools a lot.
Yeah.
The Salinator. Or like shoots lettuce at you.
Tossed all of your salads.
Hadrian's like, what's that now?
So he was grooming the Salinator to be his heir, but in the year 136, he suddenly changed his mind and adopted Lucius Saonius Commodus as his heir. Now, this really pissed off Servianus and Salinator, mm-hmm. because in the year 137, they may have attempted a coup against Hadrian. It didn't work, and Hadrian ordered them both to be put to death. Now I will chop your salad, Salinator. This salad joke, it's terrible. I'm really embarrassed by it. And according to the Historia Augusta, Servianus is reported to have prayed before his execution that Hadrian would, quote, long for death but be unable to die. That's pretty harsh.
I know, right?
That's a cruel fate worse than death to wish on someone. And sure enough, during his final illness, Hadrian was prevented from suicide on several occasions.
Servianus had like a direct line to somebody.
Oh man, yeah.
People still don't know what made Hadrian change his mind about Salinator. The best guess is that Lucius was the son-in-law of one of the four senators that Hadrian had executed back in the day, or that Aetianus did all on his own.
Right, right. I didn't have anything to do with that.
So Hadrian named him like as a way to like make amends, I guess.
Okay.
Years later, but unfortunately, Lucius was in poor health. He died before Hadrian, so that left Hadrian heirless once more.
Jeez. Can't win for losing here.
So then he adopted Titus Aurelius Fulvus Boionius Arius Antoninus.
Nice.
And that's all one guy.
Boionius.
I know. I keep being like, what up, ancient Rome? It's your Boionius Antoninus in the house.
Well, and we all know Hadrian had a penchant for Boionius, too. So.
I love Boioniuses. and that this guy would end up becoming the Emperor Antoninus Pius.
You all remember Antoninus Pius from...
You know.
There were so many Roman emperors.
Yeah, I'm like, no. But he adopted Antoninus on the condition that Antoninus adopt both Lucius Commodus' son... Confusingly, also named Lucius Commodus.
Oh my God.
So I know I was going back for like, what? Which Lucius am I talking about?
Lucius Jr.
As well as Hadrian's close friend's grandson, Marcus Aurelius, as his heirs.
Okay.
So that's how Rome got Marcus Aurelius, basically.
Yeah.
And apparently some historians believe that Hadrian's plan all along was to get Marcus on the throne. But Marcus had been too young at the time for Hadrian to name himself. The whole time he's like, this kid. He should be the guy.
He's too young for me to name him heir to the throne, but I know he's going to be a good one. Sometimes you meet a kid and you're just like, you're going to do shit, kid.
Right. But I'm not sure that's true because I think Marcus Aurelius was like 22 or something by the time Hadrian's naming Antoninus. So I'm like, that sounds old enough to me.
Yeah, we had emperors coming in at 12, 14 years old sometimes.
I know. So I'm not super sure about that. But anyway, he certainly was like, make sure Marcus Aurelius is your heir.
Yeah.
I want him in the lineup.
Yeah. So Hadrian's pretty old and sickly at this point. Like we said, he had attempted suicide several times, all thwarted by Antoninus, mm-hmm. by the way. So he went to a seaside resort on the coast. His condition didn't improve. And he stopped following his doctor's recommendations, and he indulged himself in food and drink.
I kind of get that. I guess you're like, fucking, it's over, man.
Look, every day I hurt. I could keep taking these pills, but why don't I just enjoy myself as much as I can?
I could eat Salinator every day and still be dead in a couple days. So
but
let me enjoy
I'd
a piece
be,
of steak.
I'd rather be eating Boionius. But close to the end of his life, he composed a poem.
So that's going to take us down to Poetry Corner, where we've got Hadrian, Emperor of Rome, with a special poem that he's written here at the end of his life. Take it away, Hadrian.
Roving, amiable little soul, body's companion and guest, now descending for parts colorless, unbending, and bare. Your usual distractions no more shall be there.
Apparently that poem was very popular. People really enjoyed it.
Sure.
But in the Historia Augusta, The historian Aelius Spartianus recorded that Hadrian, quote, wrote also similar poems in Greek, not much better than this one.
Damn. Wow. Everyone's a critic.
You burnt.
What a roast.
And I was like, this, I think the Historia was written like hundreds of years later, wasn't it?
Yeah,
so it's,
I guess,
like,
so.
Damn, like, literature was different then.
But finally, at the end of his life, Hadrian sent for Antoninus to come to his little beach resort. And Antoninus was by his side when he died on July 10th in the year 138. But Hadrian and Antoninus's love lived on. World Queer Story says Antoninus in particular became something of an icon for homosexual subculture. During the Renaissance, queer art turned from the mythical Ganymede to the real-life Antoninus for inspiration. Oscar Wilde wrote about him in The Picture of Dorian Gray, and Victor Hugo wrote in Les Miserables about, quote, an untamed Antoninus, who seemed to not be aware of the existence of a creature called woman. Just an interesting take on homosexuality.
Right.
He just didn't even pay attention to women. He just didn't even acknowledge that they were there.
Yeah. And I guess you couldn't just be like, and this guy was gay.
Right.
And he had a boyfriend.
Right.
Like, he had to be like, he was an untamed Antoninus. Like,
yeah.
Otherwise, it would be pornography almost to write about a gay person.
Oh, they would consider it that. Yeah.
I think so.
Yeah,
like,
yeah.
You had to couch it so carefully in terms.
Right. Yeah. They were roommates.
Yeah. They were roommates.
And Rufus Wainwright in 2018 wrote an opera that's all about their relationship. It's called Hadrian.
Mm-hmm. And of course, it would not be right if these two athletic guys were forgotten by sports. There's also an LGBTQ plus rugby tournament called the Hadrian Cup held annually. And in March 2020, they introduced an award called the Antoninus Plate.
Oh, look at that.
So they both got name checked
by
the rugby teams,
which
is nice. So, yeah, I mean, it's interesting that Hadrian had all the power in the time period that they were alive.
Right.
But the cult of Antoninus lasted longer than anyone was talking about Hadrian.
Yeah.
Took the downfall of paganism and the uprising of Christianity to get rid of it.
Yeah.
And then even today, their love matters. I mean, it matters to representation.
For sure.
Essentially, they created space for representation in artwork throughout the centuries.
Yeah. That's cool. I hope my name, you know, is involved in something 2,000 plus years from now. I hope there's a 2,000 plus years from now for my name to be involved with. Am I right, folks?
Right. Jeez.
They're going to be like, this is the Eli Banks cooling dome under which is the only thing we can continue to survive as a species.
Wow. Eli Banks.
Yeah.
It's just it's funny, too, to think about, like, the person who was trying so hard to go down in history by building a town about the boar he killed and all the things he did and recording his life. Actually, it didn't last as long as the guy who wasn't trying to do all that.
Well, yeah. I mean, it shows you where ambition gets you sometimes.
Right.
I mean, he did get those things done.
He did. And, but, I mean, because of him, Antoninus' name, you know,
right.
If he hadn't cared about him, then we wouldn't know anything about him now.
Yeah.
But
it is interesting to see which characters people connect to, you know, not just in entertainment, but in history.
Yeah.
You know, I think there's something to be said and can kind of trace it back to television too about, you know, well, sometimes these little side characters early in the story end up being people's favorites and they end up being, you know, huge main characters a season or two in.
Or get their own spinoff.
Yeah, yeah. Because,
that's very true.
You know, again, you built around this whole big, huge person with this epic story. And then people are like, yeah, that's cool. But what about this little guy in the corner? I kind of want to know what's going on with him.
Well, that was Antoninus for people, I guess.
Yeah.
So they were just like, this guy is hella relatable. He's
hot
as hell. But, like, he's hot and he was real.
Right.
I think that was extra sexy because it was like, sure, Apollo's hot. He's a god.
Yeah.
When am I going to stumble off across a god?
Right.
But, like, an Antoninus could be living next door to me.
Yeah. Just like how we all love Thor, you know, as a god, as a character, as a comic book character, you know, as just an entity throughout many forms of mythology. Yeah, but Chris Hemsworth, I mean, that's a guy.
That's
the real thing.
That's the guy. Or Chris Evans is another good option.
Yeah.
I know he didn't play a god.
Right.
But I think he's something people are like, I loved his character. And then, like, the more you get to know him as a person, you're like, he's actually Captain America, like, for real. Anyway.
Yeah.
But yeah.
Somebody give that man a shield.
So he had, like, a hot, young Fabio type. And, like,
Fabio?
A silver fox.
How old are you?
Fabio. I mean, I'm not young.
Yeah, but come on. Fabio is like...
I don't know. He just seems to be like a very Greek type.
Yeah,
blonde,
that's fair.
Big, sun-kissed fan in the hair.
Who's a current famous Greek actor?
Hmm.
Or like sex symbol? Jennifer Aniston? Sure. Okay.
Okay.
Aniston, that sounds like that could have a...
I mean, Nia Vardalos, didn't she do My Big Fat Greek Wedding?
He's a modern day Jason Mantzoukas.
Ooh.
Probably not.
Wow, what an energy.
Very different energy.
What an energy. I could see Hadrian being...
Hadrian Pimento?
Hadrian Pimento! Oh my God. I died.
Oh, all right. Let's start working on that crossover. Mm-hmm. Speaking
Hadrian
of spinoffs,
Pimento.
Speaking of a side character who became everyone's favorite,
mm-hmm.
who deserves
so
a spinoff.
True. Derek?
Uh-oh. We're losing it. We better wrap this up. We're going to just start quoting.
We're just punch drunk now.
Michael Schur shows.
Thank you so much for joining us
yes.
for the story of Hadrian and Antonis. And thanks to Piranha for this suggestion again. That
Absolutely.
Was really fun. Ancient Rome K-hole, as I said, that you sent me down. So appreciate that.
We are loving your suggestions. We got one right here as we're recording. Mm-hmm. We got another one. So keep sending them in.
Some of them are so fucked up. Like,
oh, my God.
Especially after Pugash. We got like two or three stories where I was like, I don't think I have the mind for this right now because they seem dark as hell.
We do have
but we'll get to them. Don't worry.
Yeah, we got to spread them out a little bit. Those crazy murder stories of psychopaths. Like, oh, we love them.
Someone sent me, I wish I had his name in front of me, but he sent one about, I think his name is Jay, and he sent one about someone who made a guy live in her attic as a sex slave for like 17 years.
Oh,
and I was like, okay, I need a minute.
Stay tuned, everybody.
But yeah, we will get to that.
Yeah. But please, if you got any suggestions or comments or just want to say hi,
mm-hmm.
you can email us at romance@iheartmedia.com.
Right. Or slide into the DMs on Twitter and Instagram. I'm at Dynamite Boom.
And I'm at Oh Great, It's Eli.
And the show is at Ridic Romance. If you just want to follow the show, we put, you know, episode announcements and fun memes up there. And we love your comments on there.
Yeah.
Talking with y'all on the social media. So please
right.
find us there as well.
If you want to help out the show, the best thing you can do for us is just tell people about it.
Yeah.
Get them to listen. Word of mouth is better than anything. And we want more ridiculous romantics in our entourage.
Yeah.
More. But thank you so much again for listening, mm-hmm. as always. And we will catch you at the next one.
Yeah, see you then.
So long, friends. It's time to go. Thanks for listening to our show. Tell your friends, neighbors, uncles, and aunts to listen to our show, Ridiculous Romance.
Something that makes me crazy is when people say, well, I had this career before, but it was a waste. And that's where the perspective shift comes, that it's not a waste, that everything you've done has built you to where you are now. This is She Pivots, the podcast where we explore the inspiring pivots women have made and dig deeper into the personal reasons behind them. Join me, Emily Tisch Sussman, every Wednesday on She Pivots. Listen to She Pivots on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Bring a little optimism into your life with The Bright Side, a new kind of daily podcast from Hello Sunshine, hosted by me, Danielle Robay,
and me, Simone Boyce. Every weekday, we're bringing you conversations about culture, the latest trends, inspiration, and so much more.
I am so excited about this podcast, The Bright Side. You guys are giving people a chance to shine a light on their lives, shine a light on a little advice that they want to share.
Listen to The Bright Side on America's number one podcast network, iHeart. Open your free iHeart app and search The Bright Side.
Bean Dad, The Dress, 30 to 50 Feral Hogs.
If you knew what any of those were, you spend too much time online. And hey, I do too. 16th Minute of Fame is a new weekly podcast hosted by me, Jamie Loftus. And every week, we take a closer look at an internet character of the day. Who are they? What made them so notorious? How did the internet or the algorithm choose them? And what does a person do when they're suddenly confronted with more attention than the human psyche can handle? Listen to 16th Minute of Fame starting May 7th on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
Imagine you're a fly on the wall at a dinner between the mafia, the CIA, and the KGB. That's where my new podcast begins. This is Neil Strauss, host of To Live and Die in L.A., and I wanted to quickly tell you about an intense new series about a dangerous spy taught to seduce men for their secrets and sometimes their lives. From Tenderfoot TV, this is To Die For. To Die For is available now. Listen for free on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.
The Elevation with Stephen Furtick podcast was created with you in mind. This is a podcast for those feeling discouraged or needing guidance from God. Together in this podcast, we'll dive deep into scripture, uncover the powerful truths that will help you rise above your limitations and embrace your full potential. We're here to equip you with the tools you need to conquer life's challenges. Listen to Elevation with Stephen Furtick every Sunday and Friday on the iHeartRadio app, Apple Podcasts, or wherever you get your podcasts.